NPR.
In 1940, things were bad. It was World War II, Poland and Paris had fallen to the Nazis. President Roosevelt had declared an emergency.
Tonight, over the once peaceful roads of Belgium and France, millions are now moving, running from their homes.
It was the beginning of the war, and America was not super prepared. Compared to now, our army was tiny. We just had about 200,000 soldiers.
That's not a mighty, giant army that you'd expect from the U.S.
No, we ranked pretty low in the world, not even in the top 10. We came right after countries like Romania and Bulgaria. So all these men were joining up or getting drafted, and that created a problem.
To fight this war, 10 million more people must go to work by the end of 1943. Today, employment offices are deserted. For every machinist available, for example, 22 are needed.
So the federal government put out a public message, a plea for help, really, on posters and newsreels.
With every man utilized, we are still short millions of hands. We must call upon women.
Women! For the time, it was a pretty unusual move.
And then something even more, quote-unquote, unusual happened. The American government created its first ever national subsidized daycare program.
That's right. This actually happened. Who knew? But this is a debate that Americans have been having for years. Can the federal government provide daycare? Should it? Can we afford it? Well, we managed to make it work during World War II.
I'm Darian Woods.
I'm Sally Herships in for Stacey Vanek Smith. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. Today, we go back to World War II, a time when the federal government provided daycare for working parents. It was messy, and it was an afterthought. So today on the show, what did we learn, if anything, from this grand experiment?
This message comes from NPR sponsor HubSpot. Co-founder Dharmesh Shah says that they started HubSpot to help small businesses grow by aligning all their tools and integrations into one platform.
Most of these tools have historically been separated. The tool that you use for your website is different from the analytics, is different from your system that tracks how much money you made or whether someone converted or not. All of those things are disconnected. What HubSpot helps with is kind of bringing all of that together into one unified system.
To learn more or to scale your company with HubSpot, go to HubSpot.com.
The birth of Rosie the Riveter, women in the workplace, that represented a pretty big cultural shift for the United States. Here's a clip from a government-sponsored training film from the time.
Women scare me. At least they do in a factory.
Well, maybe the women are scared too, Joe. Let's see. Most of them are working on their first industrial jobs, Joe. It's a totally unfamiliar world.
It was a strange new world. 7 million women had entered the workforce, which created a problem. If no one was home, who was going to take care of the kids? The federal government had been busy with the draft and manufacturing tanks. It had just somehow overlooked this issue. So Congress came up with a solution. It ultimately set aside tens of millions of dollars to cover a child care program. In today's money, that's about $1.2 billion. So the idea did not go over so well.
Even in the face of this war, there was a lot of opposition to running this child care program.
Chris Herbst researches public policy and child care at Arizona State University.
And a lot of the opposition, interestingly enough, came from the parents themselves.
Chris says you have to understand that the shifts in these wartime factories, they could be 12 hours long, 7 days a week. It's a long time to have a kid in daycare. So some moms and dads were skeptical. Other opposition came from educators. Business owners, of course, were strongly in favor of the childcare program.
It's hard to make tanks and battleships without workers.
So the daycare program went forward. In 1942, the first federally subsidized war nursery opened in New Haven, Connecticut.
On their way to work, parents left their hopefuls at one of the nursery schools. The 50-cent daily fee included mid-morning and afternoon nourishment, as well as a hot, balanced lunch.
The nurseries were staffed by professional teachers with state teaching licenses. It was perceived as a high-quality program, but its history has kind of disappeared over time. Chris himself only heard about it randomly one day mentioned in a news story.
I wrote a whole dissertation on childcare. I read what I thought was the history of childcare policy in this country. I had never heard of this. And so I literally dropped everything I was doing to learn everything I could about this program.
It was a chance for him to study the outcome of something that we have been arguing about for years.
It provides this kind of once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to estimate the impact of a universal childcare program, not in Canada, not in Denmark, but here in the United States.
Chris says that for women, the outcome was positive immediately. And for the hundreds of thousands of kids who were in the daycare program, it had this really big impact down the road.
Outcome after outcome after outcome, they did better than their counterparts who did not participate in the program. They were more likely to be employed. When they were working, they were more likely to be employed full-time. Their earnings were higher. They were less likely to receive cash assistance. And they appeared to be in better health as well.
But it was expensive. To pay for the war nurseries, Congress had contorted, it had stretched this existing law that dealt with housing and construction to add in funding for childcare. And that upset some educators because under the law, engineers were in charge of things, not childcare experts. And also, the program was always supposed to be just a temporary fix.
When the war ended, all funding for the childcare program would also end. And in fact, that's what happened.
But not in California.
Natalie Fusekas teaches women's history at California State.
The women did a very good job of kind of convincing some, you know, the legislature at that point was, there were only a couple women in the legislature, so you're basically advocating to a group of men.
She says California women came up with two main arguments. First, they told state lawmakers, look, we would love to stay home and take care of our kids, but we can't afford it. So what better way for us to be good moms than to put our kids in these child care centers that educate them and get them ready for kindergarten?
But they had another argument, too.
If we're still in the workforce, that means we're paying taxes, and they would actually calculate how many hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, working women were paying into state and federal taxes.
And that strategy, if you help us to keep our jobs, we will pay more in taxes, that worked for a little while. Until the federal government started making a move to provide more funding for women on welfare around the country. And it wanted its funding for California to fit with its overall policies. So it stepped in and told California lawmakers, we will keep giving you this pot of money for daycare, but if you want to keep receiving the money, you have to give it to a different group of women, specifically women who are unemployed or underemployed.
And ultimately, this pitted two groups of women against each other. Broadly speaking, women with jobs and women on welfare.
Oh, it was awful, and it got really messy.
Women on welfare got the money, and the women who'd been working during the war, they lost their daycare. But 80 years later, 80 years after World War II, some of those war nursery buildings, at least in California, Darian, they are still there. And so is this debate about to what extent the federal government should pay for daycare.
That's not going away anytime soon.
Nope, not anytime soon. What about you? Do you have thoughts? Should the federal government help foot the bill for daycare like it did back during World War II? Let us know. Hit us up at our Twitter account, @TheIndicator. This episode of The Indicator was produced by Emma Peasley with help from Gilly Moon. It was fact-checked by Michael Ha and edited by Kate Kincannon. The Indicator is a production of NPR.
Capitalism touches every part of our lives.
Capitalism is a giant force that I don't understand.
I feel that it's a very safe system.
I'm constantly in fear of losing my job.
It is our biggest success and our biggest failure.
On this special series from Throughline, Capitalism.
Listen now to the Throughline podcast from NPR.